You're listening to episode 35 of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or Podiobooks.com, you can stop by The Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com. There you'll find podcaster interviews, articles, The Gearheart soundtrack, and more. Or you can email me at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of The Gearheart. Last time on The Gearheart, Jonathan reflected on his life with Isabel and called Augustus and Maeve, located desperately needed provisions. Just when all seemed safe, Crust appeared and put a spell on Maeve to stop her heart. Can they save her? Find out on The Gearheart. Crust dashed past her as Maeve's body struck the ground. He crouched and bounded for the nearest exterior room. Maybe, if Maeve's luck held, that Darren fellow would be nearby. If not, well, that was unfortunate. Crust only knew he didn't want to owe Nicholas any favors, and now that Maeve's heart had stopped for longer than the length of a crow's wingbeat, she was as dead as anyone could have asked. Sure, Wallaby and Buskerton would become angry, but Crust wasn't in the business of pleasing his compatriots. Crust killed for gain. The exterior window rushed to meet him, and Crust made a flying leap through the fragile glass, his duster twisting in the shadows. He would much rather pick himself up in the moonlight with 1,000 broken bones than suffer capture by Cog. If he got away quickly enough, they would never even know it was him. The crash of the doorway down the hall caused Augustus to drop his tiny screwdriver into the motor housing on the brass guardian system. Tiny jewel gears dislodged, bent, and forever ruined his chance of creating a viable guidance mechanism. He pulled the tool free from the guidance system's shell and sprung from his makeshift workbench to fume at the source of the distraction. He did not see the man that leapt out of the window in the darkened room at the end of the hall. But he saw a shape, like a human-sized swatch of fabric, burst through the glass. Augustus hadn't personally seen Nicholas, so he had no way of knowing what their nemesis looked like. However, whoever fled the building by way of a window had no intention of sticking around. That simple observation could only mean Maeve lay dead or dying.
"Maeve!"
shouted Augustus. The mechanic's eyes found her as she shivered a final time on the hallway carpet, her fingers curled into morbid claws. Augustus rushed to the mage's side and rolled her over. Her stiffened joints refused to cooperate, and her face had frozen into a terrified rictus. The mechanic hurriedly placed his ear before her nose and mouth and felt no breath. He felt no pulse in the young woman's veins. Her eyes had shut down, locked in a pleading expression. Her skin cooled under his fingers.
"Maeve! Maeve, no!"
Cog's heavy footfall signaled her arrival from downstairs.
"I heard her,"
she started, but stopped short.
"Move aside, Augustus."
Augustus did as he was asked and stood, backing away until he rested against the wall. The warrior rushed in, performing all of the same diagnostics he had previously done. Call gripped Maeve's shirt open, searching her bare skin for any wounds. She found one. A simple handprint marred the blonde girl's flesh, wrapping around her shoulder from behind to touch her collarbone. The center of it burned an angry red, and little blisters puffed up around the edges of the mark. The veins under the shape had burst, leaking blood into oozing bruises. Cog prodded at the hardened muscles underneath.
"I know this spell,"
she murmured.
"This is alchemy."
"What do you need?"
"Augustus, we... there's nothing we can do,"
said Cog, her eyes dropping to the floor. But a brief flash of insight told Cog she was wrong. Maeve hadn't died just yet. Her heart quivered in her chest, unable to bring her body the life it needed, but Cog knew magic blocked the young woman's impulses. Cog's father regularly employed the spell, and she believed the patriarch had pioneered it. The warrior was perfectly aware that Maeve's heart would soon die, and they had no chance after that. All they needed was someone who could extract the blockages, someone who could reach into Maeve and realign the flow of magic and life within her. They needed Darren. Cog dashed to the open window, knocking Augustus to one side so that he landed beside his fallen friend. She planted her foot upon the sill, grabbed the inside of the wall for support, and leaned out into the pouring rain. It battered her face and formed droplets on her glass eyes as she shouted into the night. Thunder rumbled in the distance.
"Wylan! I know you're out there!"
she hoped aloud. No response came. Water danced in the flooded streets without Wylan's footsteps, and no sign of the attacker presented itself either. Cog's eyes searched her surroundings, digging deep into any door, hallway, or window. She saw only shadows and murk, broken by strange autumn leaves.
"Wylan!"
she called again. Then a tiny silhouette of a man appeared at the edge of an alleyway opposite the bank building. Its shoulders rose and fell in rapid succession. The man had been running. Darren looked up at Cog through drenched, hanging plates of black hair. His eyes seemed hollow and sad. He dashed for the bank building door, and Cog spun to venture into the halls to fetch him.
"Remain here and ready any power sources you might have. Help is coming,"
breathed Cog as she bustled past the mechanic. "Thank you," said Augustus. Cog did not reply as she rushed down the stairs.
"This way,"
said Cog, leading Darren through the wide halls of the bank. Neither of them spoke more than that. The unsaid things between them formed a coarse, painful ball in Darren's throat, and he followed after her as best he could. When they arrived, Maeve's lips had turned a light shade of blue, and her eyes remained frozen in place. Augustus made eye contact with Darren, but the mechanic's gaze seemed to vacillate between fear and disappointment. Darren's seeker crest ring still glinted from his finger, and the mechanic fixed his eyes upon it.
"It's the fox's cage,"
said Cog.
"Are you sure? Was this Nicholas?" asked the medic.
"He's the only likely candidate. I'll stand watch while you handle this."
Cog rushed to the window, where she had called to Darren moments before as the medic crouched down in front of Maeve and pressed his fingers to her neck. The wound still burned on her bare shoulder, but its ruddy hue had diminished significantly. Darren briefly made eye contact with the worried mechanic across from him.
"Hello, Augustus." "Hey, Darren. We'll talk about it soon. How long has she been out?"
"About 4 minutes, I guess," said Augustus, wiping his brow and glancing around. I think...
"What's the strongest arcane energy source you have here?"
"I got a box of distilled frost spheres."
Darren considered his words.
Fine. Bring me a punching awl from your toolbox and the box of spheres. I need you to take deep, slow breaths as you walk. Steady your hands, Augustus.
Augustus's face filled with questions, but he climbed to his feet and bustled off to Maeve's room, where he kept the supplies.
Cog!
Called Darren, and she strode over from the room with the exterior window. Let's get Miss Manners over to the table in your room. We need to be close to the windows in case this goes wrong.
We're lucky this is the cage,
said Cog, hefting Maeve as easily as one would lift a loaf of bread.
We certainly are. I've seen your father's other formulas.
Darren dashed to the exterior room and tried unsuccessfully to open the closed windows. The medic stepped back, shielded his eyes with his raincoat, and pummeled out the other glass, clearing it away as best he could. Then he spun and shoved everything off the large wooden table, leaving only the paraffin lamp on one side. It flickered in the sudden rush of activity, but the flame remained lit. Cog gently set the young woman down on the table, and Darren got to work.
What's your plan?
Asked Cog.
Do you know how to fix it?
Well, the fox's cage is almost the exact opposite of what happened to Isabel, he thought aloud. Maeve's core should be fine, but it has no natural outflow of magic. Without that, her heart is going to die first. It's going to take a large dose of energy routed through her and applied at very precise points to break the vertices of the cage.
You can't do that. It'll kill you.
Darren's eyes shot over to Cog. Why should she care? The darkness covered much of his empty smile.
You're right. I can't use my own life because I need to be the one to restart her heart after we release the spell. I'm actually going to risk all of our lives for this one.
Oh?
You'll stand watch. If Nicholas comes back, Augustus and I will be unprepared. Interrupting me will get us all killed, said Darren. Augustus is bringing his distilled frost.
What are you planning to do with that?
Cog nearly shouted, but caught herself.
Just one of those things froze a channel solid.
I'm going to have Augustus crack out a tiny bit with the punching awl, just enough to make a little stream of frost, and then I'm going to absorb it and use it on Maeve.
Cog's eyes widened when she realized his plan.
Wylan, that's insane.
Darren smiled. I'm aware. I believe you could survive if something happened, though. Augustus burst back into the room, awl and box in one hand, and set them onto the clean part of the table. Cog looked from the two men to Maeve's dying body.
I'm going to watch from the roof,
she said, and set off down the hallway as quickly as possible.
What's the plan? Asked Augustus. Augustus, I want you to focus your magic into your tools, just like with your machines. Is that possible?
Sure. I'm a regular ace with that stuff, said the mechanic, trying to smile.
His ashen complexion radiated even in the warm paraffin lamp.
Good. Then take that punching awl and poke a needle-sized hole in one of your frost spheres there.
Augustus managed to blanch even more. Taking a deep breath, he opened the box and picked up one of the spheres and the sharpened tool. He exhaled slowly and concentrated on the tip, trying to feel its point in his mind. He could sense the tolerance and character of the material and its proximity to the frost.
Well, he said, let's get this clam bake started.
Water pounded against Cog's frigid skin the moment she opened the door to the roof. Lightning ripped the distant skies into tatters. She felt the old mortal need to shield her eyes from the driving rain. The fires of burning factories still illuminated the storm with flickering golden light, punctuated by blue arcs. The storm's insistent low rumble told her it couldn't last forever, though, and would falter soon at that intensity. The warrior's unblinking eyes scanned the clouds above, searching for any sign of trouble. After she shouted to the world minutes before, it seemed as though Nicholas might decide to make his move. If he searched nearby, their location would become apparent from the light and noise. Cog continually probed the skies until she felt confident she was alone. And yet, she heard footsteps.
"Hello, Elena," came her brother's voice.
"Hello, brother."
Cog turned to face him, half expecting to be struck by his chain. She hadn't called her sword to her hand when she came out onto the roof, a fact she sorely lamented now. Rain washed over Nicholas's face in torrents, disappearing into the cloud of shadows that covered his body. His mouth curled into a dry, emotionless smile as his pink eyes met hers. He held his hands out at his sides, as if to show he was unarmed, but his chain danced in the dim light of distant fires.
"How did you find me?"
"'Twas a mere triviality, my dear. Your building has the only light in Keldenorn that isn't a raging inferno. I have been watching it for hours. Astrid, my assistant, is across the street with one of her toys, aimed at the room where your three friends are."
"One of those people is Wyland the Younger, Nicholas,"
said the warrior. Nicholas chuckled softly.
"That's wonderful. Would you like me to order her to shoot them before you hand over the Gearheart? I'm sure the revenge would be quite satisfying."
She didn't answer.
"At a loss, are we?"
"Why didn't you come and find me after Father buried me in that chamber?"
she said, her hands clenching into fists.
"I had no use for you at the time. I fled, my dear, to the lands beyond the Empire, where I could feed upon the shamans and druids of the wilds."
"Feed? So it's true. You're dying."
"That is why I find it ironic that I have outlived everyone but Wyland and you. Not really a life, though. A cracked core is a painful and tragic fate. A fate I would not wish upon anyone."
Cog scowled.
"Anyone except Isabel."
Nicholas waved his pallid hand absentmindedly.
"Necessary casualty. A utopia cannot be built without foundation of corpses."
"You should have found me, brother, so I could have helped you. I loved you. I fought Father because of what he did to you."
Her fingers tensed, waiting for Nicholas to react so she could summon her sword.
"Don't do that,"
said the hangman, his eyes discerning the intent of her fingers.
"Father and Wyland may have perfected the Gearheart with you, but my design is far more daring than yours. No doubt Father wanted to simplify things after his failure with me."
"If you don't order Astrid to stand down, I'm going to kill you. Do you understand?"
"I would welcome the peace of the grave, little sister. You do not understand the things I have seen."
"Did the blood in your veins really grow so weak?"
Cog spat.
"If you want to die so badly, why not do it by yourself?"
Nicholas laughed coyly and paced to the edge of the roof, looking down at the hiding spot across the street where Astrid perched under a wool blanket with her massive elemental rifle. She did not move to acknowledge his gaze, but she saw him. Only the barrel of the gun caught the reflected light of the burning city.
"Don't embarrass yourself, Elena. You're a child. You still petulantly cling to the foolish belief that there is some good in the world. I know better. I have seen magic make its resurgence time and again, and without fail, those who control it sharpened it into a dagger. It destroys. It separates us from one another, providing a convenient exercise for power. Even the ones who understood that better than any others, the Seekers, have grown corrupt and fat."
Cog could not answer. She had already seen
what the Seeker's hands wrought.
That caught your attention, did it? Good,
said the man in shadow. His pink irises smiled at her, flickering in the firelight.
There is a universal truth you must understand, little sister. There is only so much matter in this universe. It cannot be created or destroyed. There is only so much energy in this universe. Likewise, there is only so much life force.
His eyes swept over the rooftops of the city beyond, stopping on faraway smokestacks.
As man rises, forests must fall. As he expands his grasp, it must grow to encompass the necks of those who came before. But this wasn't always the case.
Cog let him speak, continuing to search for the moment when his guard dropped. His chain laid across the length of the rooftop, and it would likely rise to sudden life should she attempt anything. She bided her time, realizing that at least her two greatest threats stood before her. Nicholas continued.
There was an equilibrium once, when the ones before mankind, before all of this, walked upon the planet. They came before the stars, before the skies, and in the time before this universe existed. They were the brethren of the previous incarnation of all that is, and they were perfect.
How could you know this if they came before all that is?
I have been alive a long time, Elena. Not like you. I have not been asleep. 300 years ago, I met a diviner. Many called him mad. I knew he was right, though. I saw genius in his eyes. He opened a portal for me, a doorway through which we could see the old race, their habits, their passions, and daily lives. And do you know what I found?
Madness, I'm sure,
said Cog. The hangman chortled.
No. I found a complete and total lack of the most loathsome of things. Magic.
Cog inhaled reflexively. Things were starting to make sense. Jonathan's visions, the attacks, all of Nicholas's actions led to this moment.
So you grew to love them.
I kept that portal open as long as the diviner lived, and I spent every day staring into a land with no war, famine, or greed. The creatures took what the land offered, and no more. They functioned as a single tribe, and if any other species became a threat, the beasts would drive them out as one. Whatever magic existed in that universe must have been inherent in the land, or perhaps it was on another planet. Either way, it was not possessed by any of the old denizens.
Nicholas smiled warmly.
And that's when the thought came to me. Man struggles for perfection, but the fastest way to achieve that would be through the demise of the human race. By converting one life force to another, I can bring back the pinnacle of evolution, the old race. You see, humans measure the success of a species in all the wrong ways. For example, the ability to reproduce, the ability to hoard resources, and the ability to kill. Nowhere does the idea of evolution address the contentment of a race.
So you're saying that these things are greater than humanity, so mankind deserves to be replaced?
Cog shouted.
Why should we cease to be because something else seems more evolved?
I'm sorry, but my mind is merely human. I cannot view it in any terms except superlatives.
Be truthful with yourself, Nicholas. This has nothing to do with evolution or the greater good. You simply want revenge against Father.
Anger flared on Nicholas's face, the smooth folds of his skin transforming into a mask of fury. His chain lashed out, the metal singing in the storm, and Cog tried to bat it away with her hand. However, as it made contact with the warrior's arm, it wrapped around her wrist and secured itself tightly. Nicholas's feet left the concrete roof, and he rose into the air, dragging Cog upward before hurling her down onto the rooftop. She summoned her sword to her hand even as she felt her body take flight and braced herself for impact. The shattering impact blasted her senses, and before she could get her bearings, she lost her grip on the blade. Nicholas's chain ensnared her once more. "You ready?" asked Augustus, the charged awl in his hand. "As ever," Darren replied, his eyes locked upon the pointed tip of the tool. Augustus brought the metal down, and ever so gently he touched it to the surface of the sphere. What had before been hard like sulfurous rubber crunched like glass under the giant charged needle, but the thin skin did not pierce. Augustus could not risk placing any more arcane energy into the device, lest he compromise the structural integrity of the entire frost bomb. The glass did not give way to the rippling blue underneath the surface. "Careful," said Darren. "Of course." Augustus increased the pressure rather than the power of the awl, gave it a tiny twist. He held the sphere so gingerly in his hand that he had almost no grip on the device. He heard the glass dust crunching under the metal and saw sparkles as it fell away, but the sphere remained whole. Augustus pulled his awl away from the bomb and took several deep breaths. His eyes drifted to Maeve, who lay dying on the table. The mechanic pursed his lips, and once again, he placed the tip of the tool to the surface. "Do it, Augustus. There's no time left." Augustus gave the thing a quick stab, and a streamer of glittering light blue energy rewarded him. However, what started as a streamer became a jet, and the tiny sphere rocketed out of his weak grip with surprising speed. It raced around the room, smashing everything in its wake and blasting them with blistering cold air. Both men ducked, and then, on reflex, Augustus lashed out and kicked the device with every fiber of muscle he could muster. The sphere sailed out of the broken window, and much to the mechanic's surprise, it exploded. Darren hadn't even stood before Augustus had his awl to the next one. "Get ready," he breathed. Nicholas's chain stayed tight around her neck as he brought his sister to face him. She started to motion for her sword, but he squeezed her so hard he heard the very structure of her body cry out in creaking moans.
"Not a chance, my dear. I'll just pop that pretty little head off of you and be done with it. That's not the last thing you want to see, is it?"
Crashing and shouting rang out from below. A small smoking sphere rocketed out from one floor down and into the area between buildings and exploded with so much force as to nearly blow Nicholas away. Raindrops froze instantly into pelting ice shrapnel as the blast of pure frost enveloped them. Cog and her brother found themselves showered with ice and snow, their vision skewed by the sudden storm. His grip loosened about her neck, and she seized upon the opportunity. Her blade flickered and appeared in her hand as she executed a vicious slice against the hangman's chain just below where it met his body. The sword met the links, and much to her surprise, it parted them so cleanly she could see the polished silver glinting underneath. In a moment that seemed to last forever, she and Nicholas both stared as his most precious implement tumbled lifelessly down, the metal crying out as it crashed against the roof. Her brother's eyes widened, and he loosed a furious howl. Cog did not wait for him to retaliate. She planted her foot into him as hard as she could, and felt his inner systems buckle around her boot. Nicholas's face reflected only rage and shock as he fell backward over the edge and toward the street below. As Cog watched her brother tumble away, she spied activity across the street from Astrid's position. The enemy shooter shook away the snow and ice from the blast and leveled her rifle at the warrior. The sizzling bolt lanced out after Cog as she spun away from the rooftop edge. She felt its heat on her skin and the energy of the beam even through her wet hair. Shot after shot seared through the decorative crenellations, slicing past her mechanical body, and she expertly maneuvered through them. Her legs danced beneath her, putting the fighter through an intricate series of bobs and weaves before a low-placed shot forced her into a tumbling leap. Her body spun along all axes, and Cog expected the typical disorientation that she experienced as she searched for her legs to strike the ground. To her great surprise, her innate sense of direction and orientation remained, and her eyes searched for the target. She could see perfectly, and she could still fight. Cog suddenly remembered Augustus telling her back in Cerceval that he had improved her gyro system. "Fight as easily on your hands as your feet," was how he'd described it. The how and why barely entered into the warrior's mind, though. She launched her blade at Astrid's position like the shell of a tank and felt her body recoil from the force. The fiery-haired woman landed on her head, rolling across the roof, startled but undamaged. She heard the impact of the blade across the street and rushed to the edge to see the effect of her attack. Astrid's hiding place exploded in a ball of iridescent flame. Cog could just make out her attacker stumbling out of the fire, fully armored, then falling into the boulevard. She wore a suit of leather and brass, pulsing with glyphs and mechanical apparatuses of various types. The assistant appeared quite shaken, but otherwise undamaged. Astrid's weapon, however, had been sliced in two by Cog's attack, and she could see now it was the source of the blast. Nicholas climbed to his feet and stared up from the street below. His cloak of shadows seemed somehow diminished. Calm returned to his eyes, and he smiled at her.
"Do you like what I have wrought with my convergence generator?"
he shouted, gesturing to the city around.
"I'm going to do it to Fumiston tomorrow."
Cog didn't respond, but instead, she called her sword back to her side in a hail of sparks. His expression remained unchanged, and yet Nicholas blazed under the surface.
"The next day I'm going to hit Cerceval. Then I'm going to slowly, methodically, eliminate every single capital in the world until you come to Father's house."
"I'll be there,"
said the red-haired woman, and nearly failed to see Astrid drawing a strange revolver. The assistant moved quickly, far more quickly than she should have been able to maneuver in such a bulky suit. When she pulled the trigger, the muzzle flash shaped into a fire glyph, and a ball of flame the size of an automobile burst from the barrel. It crashed against the rooftop edge, rattling the whole building and searing the air around Cog. The warrior knew it would take more than a small conflagration to destroy her body, but she did not want to weather the blast. When Cog looked back into the street, Nicholas and Astrid were gone. Another sphere of frost sailed out of the window to burst upon the ground in a crackle of ice. This one did not explode like the first one, and Cog assumed some of the energy had been siphoned away from it. Then Maeve's screams sounded from the office below as clearly as a newborn baby. Maeve lay gasping across the table. Augustus sat against the wall, staring in awe as Maeve mustered the breath to scream over and over again. Her screams sounded potent and healthy, and tears rushed to the mechanic's eyes as he climbed to his feet. After the enchanter had died, fighting and fire racked the building, but now all fell silent in favor of her beautiful, wonderful screams. Augustus rushed to her and placed his palm against her face, trying to force her to make eye contact with him.
"Maeve, it's okay. You're gonna be all right. You're alive, baby, running like eggs in coffee."
He brushed away her straw-blonde hair from her terrified face and took her hands in his. She recognized him.
"Augustus!"
she cried, and wrapped her arms around him, pulling him down close to her as she buried her face in his neck and sobbed loudly.
"Augustus, I thought I was dead."
The mechanic finally managed to reciprocate her embrace and placed a hand on the back of her head, stroking her hair.
It's okay, Maeve. You're safe now. I wouldn't let anything happen to you.
Darren managed to push himself back onto his feet and nearly fell backward into a wall. His hand went to his chest and he swallowed hard.
You're welcome,
he grunted, clutching his heart and trying not to faint. Augustus's eyes met Darren's, and it seemed clear that the mechanic wanted to disentangle himself from Maeve and thank her savior properly, but she wasn't letting go.
Thank you, Darren. Thank you so much,
he said, squeezing her tightly as she rocked and rested her head against his chest.
Don't mention it,
said Darren, giving Augustus the rarest of warm smiles. The medic straightened himself up and brushed off his jacket. He pushed his black hair back into a loose part from its intense tangle and smoothed his beard. Darren pulled an automatic pistol from his jacket and chambered around.
Augustus, you're going to need to calm her down. I'm going to check on Cog.
Augustus suddenly remembered the fighting and guided Maeve away from the windows. Cog looked up from where she sat as Darren opened the access to the roof. His eyes darted back and forth until he was satisfied she was alone.
You all right? He asked, extending a hand.
Jonathan learned he couldn't lift me up the hard way. Don't flatter yourself.
Fair enough, said Darren, and he sat down beside her on the wet rooftop.
The medic shivered a bit as the cold rain bit into his skin, and he traced a sigil. The pink returned to him, and he radiated a feverish warmth.
Full of tricks, aren't you?
Asked Cog.
He smirked and shrugged. I learned how to cope with the elements a long time ago, Elena. I can also...
Don't call me that. You don't know me any more than I know you.
Darren blinked and made a face as though her fist had just plowed into his gut. He stuttered a few words and then fell silent. Cog sneered, but never made eye contact with him.
I am grateful to you for saving Maeve. But did you think I'd be grateful enough to forget what you did to me?
Cog, I... he faltered.
She finally looked over to meet his eyes. She locked onto his gaze with her stern expression, and Cog slowly spoke the words.
You are Darren now, nothing but one who fights on my side. Do not presume to be coy with me. Do you understand?
Yes.
The warrior returned her eyes to the clouds above as the rain began to slow to a drizzle.
Why did you work for my father? Why did you enslave me?
The medic swallowed hard, but did not answer immediately.
I didn't... I...
Speak, you fool!
I didn't want you to die, blast it!
So you thought we could live on together? You arrogant, selfish...
No!
He shouted, leaping to his feet. Cog regained her feet in a flash and seized his collar, thrusting him out over the edge of the roof but holding on. He flailed a bit on reflex, but then went limp.
If I thought you could actually hurt me again, you would be dead now. You have the nerve to behave so aggressively toward me when I should kill you. You placed my father's yoke around my neck and thrust me from my time. And all I want to do is let you go from this roof and from my life.
Please do, breathed the man. I would have died for you then, and I will die for you now if you wish.
Cog stared into his eyes for a long time. A sadness lived in them, passing like a thin line of smoke into the winter sky. Her expression began to fall away from anger, but she redoubled her efforts.
Damn you!
She shouted, throwing him face down in the rain-drenched roof.
How dare you do this to me?
Your father,
Darren gasped, the wind knocked from him,
wanted me to help with Nicholas. He approached me and showed me the designs for the body. He knew that Wylan the Elder had passed his secrets to me for the creation of life gems.
So that tragedy is your responsibility, too?
No. I refused. Darren rolled over, but did not look her in the eyes. I could not bring myself to do anything so cruel to another human. I was so young then. The thought that Darren had once put her through such pain entered her mind. Cog nearly took hold of him again, but restrained herself. I told myself what transpired between your father and Nicholas was none of my concern. A foolish part of me believed your father actually knew what he was doing well enough to complete the task.
He certainly did finish what he started,
she said. If I could go back and help with Nicholas, I would.
Why must Nicholas suffer for Jacopo's hubris?
Because it would have spared you, Cog, he said, sitting up. He would have gotten what he wanted and had no use for his daughter's soul.
He had little use for that anyway,
Cog said quietly. Jacopo bound me. He placed a mortal hex upon me and told me he planned to try again with you. He told me he was going to kill me, and if I cared for you, that I should make certain you survived the process. I knew I couldn't stop him, and if he tried to complete the transformation without me, you would be lost forever. If I helped, there was a chance that I could see you again, that I could help you regain your stolen flesh. Darren stood and held his arms out beside him. He slowly moved toward her, and she made no motion to stop him.
So you did it out of some sort of love?
Came Cog's voice, but it lacked the conviction and anger of moments past. That is the only reason that I have done any of this, my dearest. Cog raised her head and let the cool drops of water shower her face.
It's not like that anymore, Darren. You were so wrong to think I could ever come back to you. I understand what you're saying. I even believe you may have done a noble thing. It doesn't matter, though. I've dreamt of your evil for so long, suffered the loss of your love, and felt the grief of my own death. You took away my freedom, no matter the reason. How could I ever look upon you with affection?
Please, you must understand, he whispered as he closed the gap between them, his desperate lips finding hers. The kiss tingled upon the woman's cold mouth, and she felt his warmth upon her skin. His arms encircled her waist and pulled her closer. For a moment, she smelled him, and she could almost remember the scent of leather and horses that accompanied his body. Never had a kiss felt more wrong. Cog's rage exploded across Darren's face in the form of a hard slap. She shoved him to the ground, bringing her blade to bear upon him.
I understand one thing, Magus. You were clever enough to trick me for years, but your cunning failed you in the face of my father. You did not save me, and I shall not serve you. This world needs you now, but I do not. You would do well to remember that.
Cog had almost reached the door before she heard Darren's voice once again. Might I follow you now, my lady? Cog sighed. He was too useful to dismiss.
Until the end, Darren. Pack your things. We must move soon.
Auden Slade found his legs after another vision of the future. The contents of his stomach, one of those strange creatures he'd killed and roasted, fled his guts in a stream of vomit. The world returned to its rightful orientation, and the pallid commoner king lurched forward, catching himself on a stone balcony.
Enough, devil,
he huffed, trying not to lose any more of his food. The creatures weren't tasty by any stretch, but Auden needed food if he was to fight on the morrow. Something about Jonathan Andrews burned much brighter than the ancient swordsman could have possibly expected.
the captive spirit drew upon a relentless reserve of energy, and he had assailed Slade until the man no longer knew what was real and what was a glimpse of the future. The young man forced Slade to live in a world beyond time and space, with no orientation, no temporal alignment, and no respite. The king didn't understand. He'd felt Jonathan grow weak. He'd felt the young man begin to disappear inside of him. How could he now have such power? When Auden finally looked up from his staring contest with the ground, he saw Jonathan standing before him, dressed in khaki pants and a cotton shirt, looking quite comfortable. The dreary, frigid rain belted both men, and yet the smug young fellow looked unaffected. "Hello, Slade," said Jonathan with a glowing smile.
"It cannot be."
"I'm afraid it is. Not holding up so well, are we?"
"Curse you!"
shouted the ancestor, slashing uselessly through the air before Jonathan.
"You cannot be standing before me!"
"Is that because you never figured out how to appear to me? I have an answer for that."
"I have no need of your lies, child."
"If it were a lie, I wouldn't be standing here, would I?" asked Jonathan. Slade had no retort. "You see, all this time, I always thought it was you who gave me the visions of the future. I assumed that you were the one with the power, and I was simply along for the ride. You proved me wrong." He paused. "Well, I proved me wrong, actually."
"What are you on about?"
Jonathan laughed. "Oh, I'm sure you'd remember if I told you. First, let me explain. You're nothing but a dirty thief."
"Shut it, boy,"
growled Slade. But he knew his impotent attacks would only serve to make him appear foolish. "I have been the Oracle all along. I was the one with the power to see the future. You were simply able to leech from me like the parasite you've always been." Slade chuckled.
"Don't be ridiculous, whelp. I'm in command of our body, and you must remain inside with your little games. You have always had to borrow power from me in dire times."
"Sometimes I borrowed, sometimes I ripped your strength away with little effort."
"You have never gotten the better of me."
"Remember back in the courtyard? It wasn't so long ago I tricked you into lending me all of your power for a few minutes when I fought the Seekers."
"We fought the Seekers."
"No, I fought them. You were a useful tool." The ancestral fighter scowled, then regained his composure.
"Well, thank you for the history lesson. I'll be moving along now."
"Oh, sure. But before you do, I just wanted to illustrate the situation you're in."
"And what situation would that be?"
"Well, you're a good swordsman. It's what you do. On the other hand, I'm the prophet. It's what I do. In fact, what I'm capable of would make your head spin." Slade frowned. "Well, I did make your head spin. You see, right now, you're most in your element. Outside, preparing for battle. Battling things is your job."
"Crudely put, yes."
"Well, Jack, crafting custom visions out of the very essence of torment is what I do. And I'm just getting started. Not having my body has given me the focus I've always wanted. By the time I'm done with you, you're going to beg me to put you back to bed for another 1,000 years. And with that, Jonathan vanished. 5 full minutes passed before the anguish started again.
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Lady Fairwood's Escorts, Wings for Your Angel, Hello, ladies. Looking to have some fun on the town, but stuck with fair to middling looks? Call Lady Fairwood to get the absolutely hideous wing women you deserve. We've got everything from, oops, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were a woman, to, oh my god, is that even human? So remember, when you need to look good, call Lady Fairwood. And bye. Uncle Abner's old-timey radio commercials. Commercials for the consuming connoisseur. Are you looking to advertise your ridiculous fantasy product? Perhaps you've created something dangerous, inane, or extremely expensive. Maybe you're looking to advertise an overpriced chamois cloth. If so, call Uncle Abner for the old-timey radio commercial you deserve. It might just go a little something like this. Uncle Abner's old-timey radio commercials. Commercials for the consuming connoisseur. Are you looking to advertise your ridiculous fantasy product? Perhaps you've created something dangerous, inane, or extremely expensive. Maybe you're looking
to... So we couldn't help but notice you're listening to a podcast right now.
Kind of like our podcast, The Awesome Cast. Your podcast for everything awesome.
We talk about things you probably already like.
Anime, video games, movies...
comic books, manga, chances are if it's geeky stuff,
boobies,
we're talking about it.
We also curse.
And how. So check us out. It's www.osmcast.com, or check us out on the iTunes Music Store.
Or use your favorite podcatching program.
We're not picky.
I don't think I should have said that boobies part.
No. Kids are hip to boobies these days. It's cool.
Okay.